essentially that he kidnapped her at gunpoint. And so a SWAT team showed up at my house half an hour later. And that's not an exaggeration. I'm talking 10, 12 state police, the vests, the rifles.
The full SWAT team.
I mean, legit. Yep.
You got swatted. Yeah.
Yep. Arrested my husband.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. This episode is brought to you by these sponsors.
Navigating the college journey can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. At College Knowledge Foundation, we're here to guide students and families every step of the way. From choosing the right college to crafting standout essays and understanding financial aid, our virtual sessions and free consultations provide the tools you need to succeed. Join the growing community of students and families who've discovered how to take control of their college journey. Visit College Knowledge Foundation to learn more, book a session, or explore our free resources today.
Modern Gent Customs is your go-to for all your custom apparel and headwear needs. From individuals to businesses, with no minimums or design fees ever, inquire today at info@moderngentcustoms.com.
Are you in the mood for some mouth-watering Italian dinners? Homemade bread, cheese steaks, hot subs, cold subs, salads, sides, and of course, delicious pizza? Look no further than Angelo's, located at 1032 South 5th Ave, Lebanon. Call 717-273-8579 to place your order now.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
In this episode, we have Brittany Litz, a government contractor and financial analyst, whose story goes far beyond her professional accomplishments. Brittany is an avid runner and weightlifter, a proud mom and stepmom, and the wife of an Army veteran. She's also an advocate for justice reform, family empowerment, and community resilience. Through her own experiences, Brittany has seen the flaws in our custody, family law, and criminal justice systems firsthand. And she's determined to shed light on these issues, not just for her family, but for countless others going through the same struggles. This conversation is about perseverance, hope, and speaking out to inspire change. Brittany, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Austin.
Yeah, great to see you.
Yes.
Yeah, and I appreciate you coming back. So for the new listeners and for the people that may have missed it, you were on the podcast just last month with Devin Fink from Frontline Companions. Shout out to Devin. That was episode 146. Head over to Facebook and Instagram to see photos of, if I remember correctly, Gunner.
Yep.
Yes, Gunner, yep. The service dog. He was on your lap pretty much the whole episode.
Yes, he's still very much that. He's with his handler now. He went home at the beginning of September.
Okay.
He just started his virtual training this week, but he is still very much a lap dog.
Yeah. Oh, he was great. He was a good boy the whole time. Like, a couple noises here and there, but he was just taking a nap. He was chilling.
Yep.
And still is. Still is. Good, good. Now, he's up in New York, I believe.
Yes.
He's up there.
Yep.
That's phenomenal. So, that's a great update. He's with the family. He's doing well.
Yes. Everything's yep. good. Getting big, growing.
Good.
Like I said, he had his first virtual training this past Tuesday. And, he's a smart dog. And he's definitely... He's making an impact on his handler and their family in a very positive way.
That's all you can ask. Yep. Yeah. Terrific. Good, good. So thank you for that update. And Brittany, let's start with your background. What was it like growing up, and how did your early life shape the values that you carry today?
So I guess I didn't have the greatest childhood. We were very poor. My dad had a lot of health issues, which actually led to him getting addicted to painkillers. My mom worked all the time. She even in working all the time, she did get 2 master's degrees since I was growing up, which is, a huge accomplishment if you look at what we were going through at the time. You know, but I was home, you know, taking care of my dad, pretty much raising my brother.
Be the oldest?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. I'm the oldest too, yeah.
It's just how it works when you're the oldest. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of grew up real fast or was just born grown up. I don't know. I have a younger brother who's about 2 years younger than me. But like I said, dad had a lot of he was in 2 car accidents. So he had a lot of medical issues. But he overdosed when I was 13 on OxyContin. So before the opioid crisis. Is what it is now. Mm-hmm. So my dad died right before I turned 14. So, you know, single mom, worked a lot, which I would say definitely shaped, you know, my career. You know, I started working when I was 14. I've had 2-3 jobs my whole life, even now. You know, not that I need it, but, you know, I enjoy working. I take pride in it. My mom's accomplishments educationally, you know, kind of drove me to, I also, actually just graduated with my 2nd master's.
Whoa, let's go.
Earlier this year. Yeah.
Nice, so, congrats. That's great.
Yeah. Wow. So I, you know, that was always one thing I said I was going to have either as much or more education as my mom did.
Okay. She set the bar high.
Yep. Yep. So, and even as much as I say, I'm done with it, I don't want to go to school. You know, my, my son, has some special needs and I'm like, well, what can I do a certificate? Should I do another degree to better support him? So, learning and education is certainly something that I took from how we grew up. So I love learning and, anything that I can do, even in the industry that I'm in now, I have every certificate that there is. I mean, there's one certificate that I is something that I do want to do, project management, but otherwise I have every other one.
Nice.
So, I guess our, you know, what I took from that is, you know, working, providing, taking pride in, the career I have, how hard I've worked. I love what I do in government contracting, which is where I'm at now. But my 2nd master's is in finance, and I love finance so much that I continue working for a company that I've been with for going on 12 years. And I do their finances, their special projects, financial analysis. So I don't need to have the 2nd job, but I love it.
You like to be busy.
That too. But I love spreadsheets and I love analysis and
numbers.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, numbers scare me. Yeah, I'm not much of a numbers guy. But so it sounds like what I'm taking from that is your mom was definitely a role model, someone you looked up to. Yeah.
Sure. Yep. Absolutely.
And it, you know, it sounds like, you know, with your father and the household, you had to grow up quickly and mature quickly, and it sounds like you wanted to support and be. What am I looking for? A member. You wanted to contribute to the family because you said you started working at 14. You know, most teenagers that I know or have known or when I grew up, you know, weren't really working at 14.
Yeah. I mean, that was as early. At that time, we lived in like a small rural town in Illinois, and that was as early as you could work without, like, if your family didn't own a farm kind of a thing.
Okay.
So, you know, it was after school. It wasn't anything wild, but, you know, through college, I was going to school full time. I was running competitively. I did run track and cross country in college, and I was also working 70 hours a week. So I don't know how that maths now, but I mean, it did at the time. So, you know, being a workaholic, I suppose, comes with its own challenges, you know, I do like to stay busy. I do like to, you know, my friends were all, you know, kind of, they were drinking and partying and I don't know, that gets old quick. And so, I would much rather have built the life I did than spend it drinking and partying. And of course, like where I came from, obviously my dad struggled with addiction. You know, with addiction, of course, you see, you know, domestic violence, child abuse and things like that. That wasn't a world that I wanted to be in, and it isn't fun.
Yeah.
I guess.
Right.
I see that as like consumption, and I try to have more of an output than consume.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great way to look at it and a great way to go about it. So, you know, going into like government contracting and such, you know, I don't want to skip around, but you know, at some point, you know, you're the wife of an Army veteran, a proud mom and stepmom, you know, so what is that journey like from, you know, working at 14 to where you are now? If you can kind of give us an overview of college and such, and how did you get from there to here?
College, well, like I said, I was running and I was working. I truthfully did not know what I wanted to do. I'm not entirely sure I still know.
Really?
Yeah, like when I grow up, I'm not sure what I want to be.
Yeah.
But I think, and this is something that I try to impart upon, I volunteer for two organizations in, they're both in inner city Baltimore. It's, you know, helping college or rising seniors, incoming college freshmen do their applications, their scholarship essays, and a scholarship reviewer. And what I try to share was something that I didn't have when I was that age, was that you don't have to have it all figured out. Mm-hmm. And I struggled with that because all my friends did. They were going to be doctors and lawyers and,
okay,
and this and that. And I had no idea. And I thought at the time that something was wrong. Like mm-hmm. I should know it. How can you possibly expect an 8-year-old or 18-year-old to know everything?
Yeah.
You can't. Right. I mean, and they're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So I bounced around in majors, looked at like sports therapy, nutrition, which is something that I am passionate about now. But I biochemistry major was not my thing. That's my brother, 100%. But I'm just not – science is not mm-hmm. not my thing. So I bounced around in majors a lot. I ended up with English, which, you know, is great. And truthfully, you know, even like med schools and law schools now are looking at people who have English majors and things like that because they need to know how to write and think critically. And I'm happy that I ended there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I started my – or, you know, I worked – just worked for a while, knew I wanted to get into grad school. My graduate degree, my first one, is in human resource management. And I was about three classes left from graduation, and some of the prerequisites are like finance, statistical type okay. classes. And I was like, man, human resource is a very gray area. And I realized that if I wanted to get into human resources, there would come a time where the expectations from the company may not match up with my own personal values and personal morals. And I didn't want to have to do that. Also, I loved the finance and statistics classes. And at the time was like, can I pivot? Can I dual major? And they were like, that's not how this works. And I was like, well, I'll just finish this then.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to do, I mean, you know, kept working. I, you know, at the time, you know, I had my daughter, you know, through my whole degree. And so I was raising her, working and, but like never, I always wanted that, you know, whether it's finance or accounting. And in 2020, with the shutdown and COVID, yeah. and, you know, I'm sure lots of people reexamined their lives. And I was like, you know, I want to do this still, which is when I started my finance degree, which I, like I said, I mentioned, I just completed the master's in finance. Yeah. So.
Wow. So you're big in numbers. You're all about numbers.
I just, the analysis is, yeah. You know, and I mean, call it what it is, but there's something, it's nice to be able to see all the pieces and explain okay. the whys. And, you know, numbers are numbers and they're black and white, but when you look at why they are the way they are is, I don't know. I like it.
Okay. Yeah, each their own. I mean, like I said, I just, numbers I can't wrap my head around. I, you know, some things I can, but
Yeah, the level you were at, no.
Well,
no.
And I mean, I dropped pre-algebra in high school because I hated it. So, really? Like, yeah, I.
That's even more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, this is a whole other thing, but you know how math and the sciences and young girls' confidence in them, it can be. I think that's changing now, but. But yeah, I didn't have the confidence in it. I don't think I had the best support in it either.
Right.
And because, you know, I wouldn't say, like I said before, you know, science is just my brain doesn't work that way. But, you know, that real life application of numbers is different.
In the real world.
Yes. Which I did appreciate with I appreciated that in the graduate degree is that there was the real life application. But I do know that one of the other volunteering things I do is I'm on the curriculum review board committee on our school board. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of how curriculums are moving, at least in Pennsylvania, okay. Is that there is this move for science is what we're talking about specifically in the last year. But, you know, curriculums are changing to encourage the critical thinking, to encourage the, you know, it's not just here, do this lab and follow mm-hmm. these questions. It's really encouraging kids to think and develop how to think. And so, you know, which is something that I think that college does encourage, but to go from I did what I was told in high school
yes.
to now I have to think on my own.
Right,
and
yeah,
that's a tough transition. So it's cool to see how education is changing in that mm-hmm. way.
Which I think is phenomenal because, right, I remember in high school it's kind of like, okay, remember this, it's going to be on the exam or it's going to be on the test and regurgitate it back,
yes.
you know, and make sure you have everything, you know, here it is, repeat it, you know, and you learned it. But then you're right, it wasn't like a critical thinking or like, you know, maybe common sense comes into play. But then, boom, when you get into college or you go to universities, it's like, oh, wow, you know, I have to like do some thinking, do my own research, you know, do my own studying. It's not just like, here it is. Now, you know, prove that you've memorized it
yes.
enough, you know.
Yep. And truthfully, the different, I mean, when you know, you have kids and you're raising kids and you're watching how their brain works and how they learn, you know, I look at like my daughter and my stepdaughters and their brains are very conventional in that way. You know, they mm-hmm. they do the things they're asked to do. The Distinguished Honor Roll, all, you know, our two older girls are in seventh grade and my youngest stepdaughter's in third grade, which is the same grade as my son. But they are very conventional learners. They do, you know, and I don't know if that's a female versus male learner thing. And it could be. But my son, who has ADHD and some other things that we're working on, his brain works differently. And so to know that education is changing to hopefully, I mean, address and accommodate those things. Like he at 6 years old, my husband is an electrician, and we finished our basement. And my husband had everybody help. So the girls pulled wire, I drilled, I think they're called runways, like in the studs for the wire to go through.
Yeah, it sounds right. Yeah.
Yep. He had my son wire the outlets and he showed my son how to do it. My son is 6 years old, newly 6 years old.
Okay.
Showed him how to do one and he did the rest of the room on his own.
Really?
Supervised, of course.
Of course, right.
But then showed me how to do it.
Worried.
Right.
I'd be worried.
you know, power's off. It's all right.
Yeah.
But then showed me how to do it.
He picked it up that quickly.
His brain is just mechanical in the way that mine is not. And that gives me hope because, of course, you know, I'm a mom and I worry, and I would worry even if I worry about the girls, even though
it
right.
Like,
you know? Yeah. I feel like if you're worrying that you're not doing it right, you're doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
But my son's brain is different. But seeing the change in education and, you know, our school district specifically does have three like pathways for high school. They have a tech, like a military and then mm-hmm. the traditional like college route. So, that definitely gives me hope in that he'll be okay.
It's a positive outlook.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Let's take a sip break. This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course,
just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a garage beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. So to pick back up, Brittany, you know, you've mentioned how you're a proud mom, stepmom, wife of an Army veteran, and you're also very passionate about justice reform, family empowerment, you know, community resilience. Can you share how that has affected your life and your family on the family level, it sounds like?
As you mentioned, my husband is he's an Army vet. I have two stepdaughters. Our journey in the system started one evening last fall, or I guess at the end of last summer. My husband got a call from his youngest daughter, who was 7 at the time. It was the middle of the night. She was crying, terrified, shaking. She was hiding in her mother's basement. We could hear the screaming upstairs. This was not a new occurrence, I would say. But that night, something was different. She begged her dad to come and get her. My husband, I guess I did what any parent would do. You know, we drove. They lived about 25 minutes away. We got up. We threw clothes on. Tried to keep her on the phone. We were almost there when there was an abrupt hang up. So now at this point, you know, we don't know what we're getting into. We don't know what's happening. You know, I mentioned domestic violence was something I grew up with. So, you know, that escalates. Mm-hmm. And we got there. You know, he tried to say, like, you know, I don't know what's going on. It's between you guys. But, like, my daughter called. She's scared. I trying to remove her from the situation and what we believe to be an unsafe situation. It escalated. The stepfather was physically aggressive. He, you know, started to come at my husband. Husband felt threatened, drew his concealed carry. You know, he's an Army vet, mm-hmm. Handled it, I guess, you know, how they are trained to handle it, you know, create the distance, back up. My stepdaughter at that point had already run out of the house on her own, got in the car, was buckled in the car when we got in the car. But the story that was told to the police that night was essentially that he kidnapped her at gunpoint. And so a SWAT team showed up at my house half an hour later. And that's not an exaggeration. I'm talking 10, 12 state police, the vests, the rifles.
The full SWAT team.
I mean, legit. Yep.
You got swatted. Yeah.
Yep. Arrested my husband in the front yard. And, you know, that evening, my stepdaughter told the police that she didn't want to go back. And there's nothing I could do. Mm-hmm. My husband asked for the mother to be breathalyzed, and the officer ignored it, drove off. And that kind of set in motion a legal battle, you know, on every front. Over the course of the year, we have spent more than $90,000 between criminal justice, custody, support. And there were fraudulent CYS cases filed, closed, no findings. Mm-hmm. But the mother found my abusive ex-husband online. He started showing up. He filed fraudulent CYS cases, again, closed, unfounded, which started a custody battle on my end, though he had been absent by his own choices for over a year. My husband lost custody of my stepdaughters for a year. We're just now transitioning back to custody. But the misuse of the system, I have seen it firsthand. Between the fraudulent CYS cases, the phone calls to police trying to get him in trouble when he didn't do anything but trying to violate him. You know, the police have showed up at my house more than once. And even as they come in and they do their jobs, they have said, and more than one set have said, that you would not believe how often this happens in custody disputes, yeah. Which I think is safe to assume means that the amount of retaliatory claims, PFAs, CYS cases is through the roof. I mean, only a small, like less than 20% of CYS cases are founded.
And real quick, CYS?
Children and Youth Services or Children Protective Services.
Okay.
I think it's
CYS
in Pennsylvania. It's CPS in New York. So
That's what I figured. I was just like, I just want to make sure to clarify. Keep going. I don't want to cut you off.
We have navigated a system that, truthfully, up until this point, I had faith in. You know, faith that the criminals who were being prosecuted were criminals, that the parents in, you know, the custody family court system were recognized for who they were. And it's not what happened. And, you know, obviously going through this, you know, you see and hear other people's stories, and this is, it's not unique. And as devastating as that is to say, you know, I can't tell you how many times my husband has come home from work and been like, oh yeah, so-and-so on the job went through the same thing, or this other person went through the same thing. And it's confusing and it's upsetting. It's devastating, that, you know, though alienation, manipulation, parentification, all of these things are recognized, it's almost, I mean, in our case, I feel like they were ignored. But they are abuse. It is emotional abuse. It's child abuse. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I watched, what I have watched is a good husband, a good man, a great father lose his girls, and he had the majority of the time before this happened. There's not one person that can tell you that he is a bad father. And in a moment where he acted like what truthfully we all expect the fathers in our lives, the men in our lives to do
is to protect.
That's what, I mean, the military groomed him to be that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we want from our men, from our soldiers, is protection and action. And we've had more than, you know, because everyone is like, well, what could you have done different? What should you have done? Call the police is the right answer, right? Except for police officers, therapists have said police officers wouldn't do anything. That's a domestic. We don't want any part of that. Or they'd show up because they have to show up, but then it would have been like, well, you know, you both have legal custody, so then what was the alternative?
Yeah, right.
To do nothing? And then she thinks that she'll never call again because he didn't do anything. Or on, like, the absolute worst case, which is catastrophizing a bit, but domestic violence escalates. Mm-hmm. And if they were under the influence of anything, accidents happen.
Right, right. You would hope not, but you don't know. You never know. And, you know, like you're saying, it affects families across the board. You know, it doesn't matter race, religion, creed, you know, age or
economic or status.
Economic status, yeah. It affects everybody. And it sounds like it's more prevalent. And like you said, I think you hit the nail on the head there. You hope that the justice system and the legal system is putting the quote-unquote criminals away, you know, or looking out for the families or the people that are, but you don't know, and that kind of shakes your foundation of the legal system. You know, it
makes does. You question. It does, and I mean, we sat in a plea hearing and with no plea. Husband had top secret clearances, worked in the underground Pentagon, army vet, you know, decorated 14 years of service.
Wow.
You know, union electrician, never been in trouble in his life, first offense. And we went into this plea hearing, and there are people who were in jail for a parole violation, violated parole again, got a year of parole, not an additional year of jail time, not fines. There's another woman who had stolen money, left the state. She was calling in for her plea hearing and got a year of probation. You know, it seems like there is just sheer inconsistency in the system, and not in a, well, each case is different, not even in that. Mm-hmm. You know, there were extenuating circumstances, which we could prove. I mean, we had receipts for the months leading up to it. We had, you know, and witnesses and people who could speak on that behalf, and it never mattered. And so this man who has never done anything wrong in his entire life is mm-hmm. like, losing the girls was the absolute worst thing. I mean, and it's not just, you know, his life was impacted. My life was impacted. My children's lives were impacted. You know, yeah. Not only did we lost, you know, their stepsisters, their siblings that they loved and adored, but their father was reintroduced in an unhealthy way. He started stalking me in the fall, with information that he was given, not information that I provided, and he would show up at places to, like, the Apple Harvest Festival.
That's wild.
Sports games that he didn't have access to the schedules for. And the PFA that I tried for with 2 years of documentation, you know, dates, times, things that were said, I didn't get it because they didn't want to get involved in custody, except for what my husband was going through was the polar opposite of that.
Yeah.
So it just is, you know, the false reports, the court processes, you know, probation, it was almost weaponized to limit access to, you know, the system was being used. And I get, you know, acting out of caution, but if you look at both situations, that the math's not mathing.
Mm-hmm. And you would know.
Yes.
Yeah. To look at it from an outsider's perspective, maybe a bigger, broader view, right, is the impact it's having on the children, on the families. You know, it's obviously affecting across, you know, multiple families in this case, but more so the kids. That has a big impact that lasts with you, you know. I mean, I know I've talked about it on the podcast, you know, my parents went through divorce when I was young, and obviously that affects you, and it's something you live with, and, you know, being the oldest sibling, you know, you kind of carry things differently, or, you know, I forget how to best describe it, but you're the first, so your parents learn how to raise your siblings based off of how they raise you.
Sure. Like,
they're always going to be harder on you because you're the oldest and such, but what I'm getting at is it's going to affect the kids, and that's
right.
The biggest shame. You know?
Well, and the outcome of this, and, you know, this has been a year-long process by the time we got to custodial trial, which was 2.5 days. So, I mean, it was drawn out intentionally, which, again, system flaw. Like, we, mm-hmm. you know, because the family court system is one of the highest, like, net income industries in the country. I mean, you figure divorce. I mean, just my having to combat the jurisdictional issues and everything in New York, I mean, that cost me $16,000.
Wow.
And that was only to pretty much say New York doesn't have jurisdiction over my kids because we've been in Pennsylvania for 2 years.
Well,
$16,000.
Not everyone can do that.
You know, I mean, that. I barely can.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I mentioned, you know, $90,000. And that was just until August.
Wow.
Now, there's been more attorney fees since then. You know, my custody, well, his kind of came to an end, so to speak, though it's never really over.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is now kind of starting. So, you know, that was just until August. We're going to spend, well, so, you know.
Say probably close to $100,000 come the end of the year.
I would say.
Yeah.
Close to it. And so, you know, we are fortunate that we have good jobs and, you know, we make the money that we make. And, you know, if we needed to have family support, we could have some family support. But, you know, my brother walked away mm-hmm. because he had a high conflict co-parenting relationship, and she said, if you can't do this, then you can't have him, and withheld custody, and he was paying child support, and he couldn't, and I mean, he had a good job. He was, you know, he's a biochem engineer mm-hmm. for a pharmaceutical company, so he had a good job.
Good job, yeah, very good, yeah.
He couldn't afford child support and a legal battle,
yeah.
And so he had to say, you know what, till he's like the age of whatever.
Is it
18?
It's
technically 18, but they pay more attention the older they get. So, you know, he said until he's older and he can make the choice on his own and I'll do some reunification, but I can't do this.
Yeah.
I mean, for his mental health and well-being, but also financially, he couldn't. So, you know, the teen dads who want to be a part of their lives but can't afford it. And through blue-collar electricians who just want to be in their kids' lives, but they're paying child support at like a criminal rate. They can't afford that. So they have to do whatever she says to even where we're at, arguably a higher economical status than those individuals. Like,
yeah.
At what point, what's the breaking point?
Right. You're right. Cause you have two fronts, you know, you obviously want to see your kids, but yet financially you can't do the legal battle and also support them. So
like criminal implications to not paying your child support. Licenses are suspended, jail time, bench warrants. So you don't have a choice but to pay support, but which means you have to make the choice to fight for them. Mm-hmm. And that shouldn't ever have to be a choice that a parent has to make. And I mean, especially, you know, a father shouldn't have to make that choice. And I say that carefully because, you know, on one side, I'm watching, you know, my husband, who is a good, fit, and able parent and was deemed a fit and able parent by the court, but still got the bare minimum. On the flip side of that, you know, an abusive father who is not fit and able should not just be given the bare minimum. So, and that's where like the inconsistencies are missing. I mean, the, you know, judicial oversight and accountability, for contradictory rulings that don't match up with evidence or, it's the inconsistency in applying laws and the, lack of transparency and oversights in family courts that, you know, are a huge part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to ask you, what do you think are the biggest shortcomings in these systems and how do they really affect the families? You don't figure it out or learn about it, I guess, until you're in the system.
Yeah.
You're going through it. Yeah.
Because I had no idea. I didn't, and I guess you don't even hear those stories until you start going through it. And I think that's where we have found some solace is that we aren't alone. As upsetting as that may be, that this is not unique and is more widespread than we even thought, that, you know, the struggles that we're going through, they're not unique. And there are so many people out there who just want to be in their kids' lives and they have to fight for their bare minimum. And, you know, I'm talking specifically, about divorce because that's where we're at. As you know, you're with your kids 100% of the time and you're expected to be there 100% of the time, right? I mean, they want, you're supposed to work, but you're supposed to work full time, but also parent full time. And right, like we could all talk about the challenges with that. Mm-hmm. But the second a divorce or separation happens, then it's like, well, dads are optional and they shouldn't be.
Right.
And again, fit and able dads.
To be clear, right.
And that's where there is, coincidentally, there is a lot of work being done in this country and in this state to prioritize equal, because it's not shared custody, it's equal parenting time, equal custody, and to make that 50-50 the default for fit and able. And then learning about that and the work that's being done in this country, certainly it doesn't take away the last year plus, or any of our future pain or struggles and challenges, but it does give me hope that, you know, the policymakers, lawmakers, you know, there's a, in November at the White House, there will be a big thing happening. Mark Ludwig, who is in Missouri, went through something similar. The senator in Pennsylvania, Representative Jamie Flick, is part of the custody reform in Pennsylvania. He, same thing, fit and able. He wanted his kids more, and they gave him the bare minimum as every other weekend.
Wow.
Even though he ended up having custody of children from the Fresh Air Project in the city. So, you know, he was fit and able for those children, but was not given.
For his own?
Yep. Yep. So, you know, there is work being done, and that's positive. But I guess I just wanted to share that, you know, you're not alone, and that frequently, and we have to remind ourselves of this daily sometimes, is that we survived. We've already made it through the days we didn't think we would survive.
There you go.
You know, that the day that my husband lost custody, he broke, and I, because his girls are everything, and you know, I've watched my daughter break, because you know, she knows what's going on, and you know, an old soul and all of that, and my son, who doesn't understand, so to speak, but knows that they're not home. Yeah. Asks about them every day.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah. And cried when they left. You know, we had 5 hours of supervised visitation a week. That was it.
That's it. That was it.
Wow. Yep. Yep. And we had to fight for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I've watched my whole family fall apart.
Let's take a snack break. This snack break is brought to you by Jerky Beef Jerky. When late night editing episodes for the podcast, Jerky Beef Jerky keeps me fueled and ready to go with 11 grams of protein, high quality ingredients, and no nitrates or nitrites. With 5 different flavors to choose from, Jerky Beef Jerky, eat meat, repeat. Because I got, you know, my daughter and I got little kids, you know, and it's like, to not see them, oh my Lord, can't even think about it.
Yeah, I mean, when we...
For 5 hours a week? Oh.
When she got the final God. PFA, and we met with a new criminal lawyer, and then we drove home, and, like, I was behind him, and I could see how hard he was crying in the car, and this is, like, I mean, your typical military alpha male.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know what I mean?
Doesn't cry much at all, if ever.
No.
Yeah.
And I came home... one of our dogs had gone into her first heat, so there was blood everywhere, so I'm cleaning up that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that, like, silver lining, and that's what we really try to, like, look at, my daughter held him at arm's length because, you know, of everything she went through with her dad. So she was untrusting. And he came downstairs that night after, you know, and cried, showered, whatever. It was obvious that he was distraught. And my daughter stood up on our chair. So, like, she was, like,
eye level,
and, like, just wrapped her arms around him.
Yeah.
And, like, wow. And they just, like, cried together.
Had a moment. Yeah. They bonded, right?
You know, so, like, I get it. On every level, I get it. But, like, she is, and, you know, as much as you don't want your kids to have to experience trauma, but, like, she is grown up.
Yeah, you mature fast.
She's been solid for all that this has been hard for her. And we just cried together.
Mm-hmm.
Just like.
Sometimes you gotta.
You know.
You gotta let it out. You can't keep that in, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we've been able to grieve as, like, the four of us, like, kind of my son, because he just doesn't understand, like, fully really understand.
He just misses them and doesn't know why they're not there.
Right.
But he doesn't know why they're not there.
Well, except for, like, when I kind of told him, like, an age-appropriate level of, like, what happened. So, you know, even his faith in who my husband is as a dad and as a stepdad, you know, he, total faith and trust in him, too, you know. So, yeah, no, it's been hard.
A whirlwind, yeah. I just want to, you know, because I mentioned... With my family, not that this is nothing to do with my story, but, you know, I was fortunate enough that, you know, both my parents were local, loving, caring, and not saying that that's not in this case, but there was no issue that it affected me to an extent that I can recall. And it's just a shame that, like you said, there's so many out there
But thank goodness that your parents were able to, even if there was stuff going on, that you were unaware of it. I mean,
yeah, well, that's it. Right.
Thank goodness, right? Like that they, and I'm not saying necessarily that's just a relationship that they had, but I've seen this a good bit. Like, love your kids more than you hate your ex-spouse.
There you go.
Love your kids more than you hate them.
Yeah.
And that's not what happened. And like I said, the manipulation, alienation, that's.
Yeah.
What's it doing to them?
Yeah, exactly right, as they get older. So, you know, I know my mom listens a lot, so shout out to Mom and Dad. Love you guys. And, this is getting me emotional. It is, because it's something that being a father, you know, very passionate about. My gosh, if my kids ever called, yeah, I'd be there in a heartbeat. Now I need a moment. What do you think is the best course of action, knowing now what you know?
Start talking to a lawyer, because... Like, and you don't want to get in the system. The system is, it's a lose-lose. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody said that to me, and I truly believe that that's the case. You know, the system is a lose-lose for everybody. And, you know, so you want to stay out of it. But in that case, and as awful as it sounds, like, then there would have been a record. An official record, not voicemails, text message. I mean, we had voice memos. And so it was like this one night, overshadowed all of that, like this domestic violence, the police don't want to get involved in that. They don't want to touch it. The CYS even, like, because then you have the children that have to speak, which traumatizes in some form or fashion the kids. Mm-hmm. Like, we had to fight to get the bare minimum. As dark as some of these days can be, and as hard as some of these things are, the girls are coming home. And truthfully, like, as much as this has been like a dark place for us, we started Frontline Companions, which has been such a good light. You know, I get text messages from Damien, his wife, Adrian.
New York, yeah, yep. Gunner,
I get text messages about how much good Gunner is doing for their family. And we wouldn't, and it's not to say that we wouldn't have, but like, we started Frontline because my husband started volunteering as a way to, like, I got to do something good. I need to give back. I need to have something else to focus on.
Yeah.
And look what came out of it.
Shining, like, a bright light.
Right. Know? Like, yeah. Gunner is doing things, like, you know, Adriana said, you know, I have noticed such a change. I have, you know, he has noticed a change in himself. You know, he has said, like, I didn't realize how dark and angry I was all the time. Like,
yeah.
And just baby dog
is
doing baby dog things. And
doing his thing. Yeah.
You know, like,
that's phenomenal. Right.
So,
right.
You know, we've made connections, like, with Devin and his family, and
great guy.
Developed a support system with him. And, you know, we've made, other connections that were maybe in the community that, like, you know, other parents that we knew of, but like that became our family. And, you know, so we have built this community out of this tragedy. And so we as much as at times we felt like we were alone, like, we weren't.
Yeah.
And we built this community, and we built our nonprofit, and, like, there's been a lot of good that has come from it. And, you know, our church family that we really leaned heavily into has been huge, in that as well. And I definitely think, like, we've grown in our faith. And grown in our faith together. Not that we were ever unfaithful, I guess. But, you know, I mean, life is busy. And the last thing you want to do some weeks is get up on a Sunday morning and go to church.
Right.
But, you know, the men's group, the mom's group, the, you know, mowing the lawn at the church, like, you know, that was just more of where it would have been so easy to let the depression set in and to recluse. And, you know, we still got up and we got out and we went to work and we did good things and we put good back into the community. And that certainly helped us along. And it is easy to just give up. Some days moving forward is just getting out of bed.
Yeah, that first step, right? Making your bed in the morning.
Yep.
And that sets a tone right there, you know? And it's those little things. And like I said, you know, you're with Frontline Companions and everything you're doing, you know, the church and the community that you are building, it's shining a light, you know, it's a positive light, you know, and it's being bright. And, you know, I do truly wish you all the best of luck, and hopefully all families can find peace and can move on for the sake of the children. But what I'm taking from this episode is perseverance. And I want to know, before we end, you know, we're getting towards the end, how do you personally define perseverance?
I mean, I guess just kind of what I just said, like getting up when you don't want to. Mm-hmm. Like finding something outside yourself. And not even like just yourself or like your immediate family. Like, right, like we were fighting for the kids. But if everything we did was fighting for the kids, we would have gotten lost. Mm-hmm. And which is why, you know, frontline was so important. And, you know, doing the dog training and developing the veteran community is so important. And looking at their struggles and where they're at. And, you know, I mean, there are homeless veterans everywhere in this country. And how can we help them? And how can we make their lives a little brighter? And, you know, volunteering the time, even, you know, you could arguably say that I have like more chaos than maybe I need to say no sometimes is right. Possibly, but doing things, even when you are sitting at the edge of that black hole, right? Doing things that you still find joy in, like mentoring those inner city Baltimore students. Like,
yeah.
I love doing that and bringing something to, even if only one of them, you know. But actually, one of the programs that I volunteer with is called Building Steps. Okay. In Baltimore. And so those are the kids that I like do their essays with and help them develop their essays and stuff like that. Well, they reached out to me in the spring. They were doing a business competition with Mind Grub. And so they were supposed to write like a business plan for AI in whatever industry they were assigned. And one of the girls who I had done her essays with was in my competition group. And my group won.
Whoa,
there, nice. Yeah. So they got internships out of this, in the, like, I think they were with Mind Grub, but it was just so cool to see, like, doing her, I mean, and these kids, I look at, like, what I've been through, where I've come from, how I got here, and, you know, these kids are, you know, what they've already gone through at 18 is amazing that they are persevering. I mean, they might be the first ones to go to college in their family.
There you go.
Like, you know what I mean? And
it's a huge impact.
And I mean, even in, you know, the adversity that I have experienced, like that was, I had my mom and who was strong and she worked and she was a great role model. And, you know, for all that we went through, like she was there and she was steady. Yeah. And, you know, I got so much from her. Like these kids didn't have that. And they're still going to college to be the first one in their family. And they, you know, one of them's like one of my current kids, her sister has autism. She wants to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Because she has learned so much from her sister having autism and she's nonverbal. Wow. Yeah. So like these kids are going through so much and they're persevering. They aren't letting the hand that life has given them tear them down. And that's where I think, like I said, you know, there were many days where waking up in the morning was rough. But I mean, we did it. I mean, ultimately, like, even though we fought for the bare minimum, I doesn't mean that I don't have hope for the future, but like, we accomplished what we set out to do, which was to bring the girls home and to bring our family back together. And along that journey, we, you know, are developing a community and with, you know, veterans in our area. And we've given a gift to a, you know, a veteran who maybe was struggling otherwise. And we've set an example for these kids, even if they don't recognize it now, they'll know like, hey, I know my parents went through like one of the roughest years of their lives mm-hmm. when I was 8, 12, whatever. I can do this.
Yeah.
Whatever this thing is in life, that's nothing.
It's cake. I got this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, you don't want that for your kids, right? But if we can take some good things out of it, and that's the relationships that we've built, the community that we've been able to be a part of, and the fact that we didn't quit.
There you go.
Like this, it was always a marathon. It was never a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to train to be a distance runner. So
there you go. So there we go. No, I think that's a perfect spot to end this episode. I just want to thank you again for sharing your story, being open, you know, and I think it's truly about turning hardships into hope and using our experiences to make a difference for others, which is exactly what you all are doing. So I'm going to wrap it up. If you're good.
Yeah.
All right. End of here.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So for the listeners, check the show notes links to learn more about Brittany and the causes she shared. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it, leave a review, and subscribe to American Grown Podcast for more incredible stories from the heart of our community. Brittany, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Austin.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors. A&M Pizza, authentic Italian food made with the finest quality ingredients. Proudly serving the Lebanon and Lancaster area since 1980. Stop by their Campbelltown location today. You'll be happy you did. Haynes Auto Detailing, run by owner Josh Haynes, offers a professional service that is sure to have your vehicle shining from wheel to wheel. My wife and I both trust Josh with our personal vehicles, and believe me, with two kids, the back seats tend to look like a hot mess. But after a trip to Haynes Auto Detailing, the vehicles look better than brand new, both inside and out. Message Haynes Auto Detailing on Facebook or call 717-679-3673 to get your vehicle looking right today. Are you in the mood for getting out of your house this evening? Head over to Boyer's Tavern in Rexmont, PA. They have appetizers, soups, salads, wings, mouth-watering burgers, sandwiches, and many other entrees to choose from. Proper food and drinks made by slightly improper folks. Head over to Boyer's Tavern today or give them a call at 717-450-4063.
Hostler Engraving is your local source for unique, quality-driven laser-engraved gifts for all occasions. Place an order today by visiting our Facebook page at Hostler Engraving. You won't be disappointed.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.